Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. Gordon Chang is our guest. He has been so weekly throughout 2015, and as a result, we have been, I think, offering some of the most insightful analysis and commentary on what is going on in the Asian region, notably with Communist China, but a lot of other places besides. And Gordon, we're going to do kind of a lightning round here in this third segment to try to take stock of the various stress points, I guess is one way of thinking of it, fracture or fault lines, maybe tectonic plates that are moving in ways that have profound implications, again, not just for the region, but for us as well. Let's start with some of China's, well, I think of it as kind of colonial operations. Djibouti is a place where they have opened up a naval base. Talk about what that means in Africa and what else is going on in that continent.
Yeah, Djibouti is China's first overseas military base, but it's not going to be the last one. They're also talking about Walvis Bay in Namibia, which is the South Atlantic. And also, the Chinese have been sniffing around Lajes, which is in the Azores. It's been a U.S. Air Force base, but because of budget cuts, the Air Force has made it essentially a ghost base, which is the term that's used, and the Chinese want it. That would put the Chinese within striking distance of Washington and New York. They would control the North Atlantic, and they would be able to shut down the Mediterranean. The United States has not really paid attention to China's ambitions in that area. We have got to change our views because the Chinese could be on our doorstep very soon.
This really removes it from just the distant Western Pacific to very much close to home, Gordon, and the strategic implications of it are staggering. So is what the Chinese are doing in Latin America. And we're talking not just about military presence in places like Cuba, but also what they're doing to develop infrastructure and really, as I say, sort of colonial-type operations. A family member reported on their activities buying up the copper mines in Peru, for example, and building major railroad access points and lines there. What is China up to in our own hemisphere, and are there strategic implications there as well, Gordon?
The Chinese have made strategic investments in Panama around the canal area. That, of course, is important to us. There is the Chinese businessman who is thinking of a canal across Nicaragua. That probably won't happen because that businessman has lost about 84% of his wealth because of the stock market crash. But nonetheless, we see Chinese investments throughout Latin America, especially in the commodity area. I tend to think that this is one thing we may not have to worry too much about because the Chinese have overcommitted and overpaid for commodities which their manufacturing sector cannot use. But nonetheless, they have grabbed a significant hold in Latin America. We have not been paying attention.
Gordon, in the neighboring nations, you've talked about threats that the Chinese pose to them. Give us a sense of what's happening that might further complicate either Chinese calculations or perhaps our defense interests, notably what's up with North Korea at the moment.
Yeah, North Korea and China have had very troubled relations, but nonetheless, their militaries have continued to talk to each other. That's the important thing. Kim Jong-un, North Korea's new ruler, is trying to distance himself from Beijing. And that means the guy with a growing nuclear arsenal is now sort of on his own. That's, of course, a concern. The real concern for China, though, is not North Korea. It's that the countries in the region are starting to work together because they all see a common adversary, which is China, which means that right now there is a coalition forming from India all the way up to South Korea. That's a very good sign for us.
There has been a report just today that the South Koreans have finally come to terms with the Japanese over the very, very thorny and vexing issue of the so-called comfort women of World War II. Give us a sense of what that might mean for a relationship that has been, despite both of them being important American allies, rocky at best.
The United States has treaty relationships with both South Korea and Japan, but South Korea and Japan do not have a treaty relationship, and that's largely because of historical enmity between the two. The Japanese colonized Korea, and the Koreans have never forgot it. Matter of fact, the antagonism has gotten worse over time, not better. But nonetheless, both the leaders of Japan and South Korea understand that their larger geopolitical interests mean that they do have to cooperate with each other. There's going to be problems on the comfort women issue going forward. This is something that's not going to be solved anytime soon, but they are starting to make a little bit of progress. That's good for the United States, which wants to see both Seoul and Tokyo work with each other so as to have a stronger defense.
And speaking of stronger defense, the Japanese have seemingly been taking your advice, Gordon, and building up their military. I gather that they've adopted the largest defense budget in post-war history. Is this a moment when you see those nations that have been at odds with the Japanese, basically going back to World War II, really making a common cause in the face of what is a clear and growing threat to them all from China?
Yeah, there's been a significant shift in Japan, and it's not just Shinzo Abe, the current prime minister, who is described as a nationalist. This started to occur before his watch. This is important because the Japanese now understand that the Chinese threaten the Japanese homeland, and so therefore there is a growing consensus to have a bigger defense budget, which will be 1.5% larger than the year before. In Japanese terms, that's historic, and that is stunning. The other thing that's important is that countries around the region are starting to accept the Japanese as security partners. This is something that you would not have thought of 5 years ago, but now Japan is willing to work with the United States and others in the region. This is going to be important because although Japan is smaller than China, nonetheless, it has an extremely effective military, and that's good news as it starts to work with its partners in the region.
Gordon, we talked a little bit about Taiwan, and clearly a democratic nation that has at least historically been considered an alternative to communist China is a problem for the Chinese, one that they've long made no secret. They intend to ultimately liquidate. What about one even closer to home, namely Hong Kong? What's happening there? We've seen a lot of ferment, I know, in 2015. The Chinese inexorably accomplishing what many of us feared they would in terms of securing and crushing that that outlier, that democratic outlier in Hong Kong.
Well, the Chinese ruler Xi Jinping is intent on crushing Hong Kong and eliminating any sort of opposition to Chinese rule. The important thing there, though, is that as he tries to exert more and more control over the city, people there are now starting to talk about independence from China. This is unheard of. This is important not only because of Hong Kong, where probably China will succeed in snuffing out opposition forces, but this is important because people in Taiwan look at this and say, we want none of this for ourselves. And so in Taiwan, you're starting to see a really strong, vibrant society which sees itself as Taiwanese, not Chinese, and therefore does not want any part of the People's Republic of China. And that is an important thing because Taiwan is critical. It's a critical choke point for the Chinese military that wants to get out to the Western Pacific. And so therefore, as Xi Jinping succeeds in Hong Kong, he is failing in Taiwan. Now, nonetheless, people in Hong Kong are fighting, and this is really inspiring and stunning. But nonetheless, China can probably snuff out the people who want a vibrant society there.
Particularly if the United States does nothing to encourage those Democrats and demonstrate its solidarity with them. I'm very anxious to see, Gordon, how we handle this defector. It sounds like that would be a very hot potato for the Obama administration, which has gone to such lengths to curry favor with the Chinese government. We'll be following that and much more with you, I know, in 2016. We look forward to our visits each week, and appreciate what you do for us as well as for the rest of the country in understanding this incredibly important and highly dynamic part of the world. Keep it up, my friend, at Forbes and World Affairs Journal at Fox and elsewhere, and we'll talk with you again next week. Next up, we'll continue our conversation about 2015 in Asia and what it might mean for all of us with Bill Gertz, the military threat from China, and more straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.